Welcome back, everybody, for another deep dive with us. Today, we are going to be unpacking some excerpts from Dr. John Oswalt's lectures.
Yeah.
And this time, we're going to be looking at the transition from 1 Kings to 2 Kings in the Bible.
Right.
And, you know, it's a story about King Ahaziah and the prophet Elijah. But really, more importantly, it's about this power struggle.
Yes.
Is Yahweh truly the king, or are there other forces kind of like vying for that top spot?
Yeah, you know, what's fascinating about this is that 1 and 2 Kings were originally one continuous narrative.
Right.
They were only divided because the scroll was too long. So we often think of them as separate books, but to see this story as part of a larger whole, I think gives us a much richer understanding.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So let's set the scene. Ahaziah is introduced right at the end of 1 Kings.
Yeah.
And we're told that he did evil in the eyes of the Lord.
Right.
Which, you know, we hear that a lot about the kings of Israel, both the northern and southern kingdom.
Right.
But he's being compared to both Jeroboam, the first king of the northern kingdom, and his parents, you know, the infamous Ahab and Jezebel. So why the comparison?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, each of those figures represents a step further away from Yahweh.
Oh, yeah.
Jeroboam's sin was worshiping Yahweh in the wrong way. You remember those golden calves?
Right.
Symbols of earthly power and fertility. So it was idolatry, but it was still focused on Yahweh in this kind of distorted way.
Uh-huh.
Ahab and Jezebel went a step further. They attempted to replace Yahweh entirely with Baal, a Canaanite god.
Okay, so it's like Ahaziah is like the culmination of this trend,
right?
That's
right.
But like, how is that different from just being like, you know, a bad king? Like, what's the significance of these steps further away from Yahweh?
It's about understanding the nature of Yahweh. Dr. Oswalt really emphasizes this idea of transcendence. So think about looking up at the night sky and feeling the sense of awe at the vastness of the universe. That sense of something bigger than ourselves, beyond our comprehension, that's a glimpse of God's transcendence. You know, he's not just another god in the pantheon. He's the source of creation beyond our world and yet intimately involved with it.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm starting to see why idolatry is such a big deal here. It's like trying to understand the internet by just looking at your phone.
That's a great analogy.
You're missing, you know, the vast network, the servers, the complex infrastructure that make it all work.
Exactly. Reducing God to earthly things completely misses his true nature.
Okay.
And that has implications for everything, our understanding of meaning, purpose, even our potential to become something more than just products of our environment.
So how does Ahaziah figure into all this?
Well, the story picks up with Ahaziah having a pretty nasty fall. He's injured, and instead of turning to Yahweh for healing, he sends messengers to consult Baal-zebub, a Philistine god.
Baal-zebub,
yeah, associated with flies and possibly even death and decay.
Interesting. It's also interesting that he specifically sends messengers to Ekron, a Philistine city.
Right.
What do you make of that?
That's a great observation. You know, Ekron was in enemy territory.
Right.
So sending messengers there shows just how far Israel had strayed from its own God. They're looking for answers, looking for healing, but they're looking in all the wrong places.
Yeah. And that's where Elijah enters the scene, right?
Yes.
And he's not too happy about this whole Baal-zebub situation.
No, not at all. Elijah intercepts those messengers with a very pointed question. Is there no God in Israel?
Yeah, it's not just a question, though, is it? It's like a confrontation.
Absolutely. It's a confrontation.
So it's more than just Elijah being a messenger.
Right.
He embodies Yahweh's authority.
He does.
What are the implications of that?
I think of it like this. If a foreign ambassador is treated with disrespect, it's seen as an insult to the king they represent.
Right.
So in the same way, Ahaziah's actions are a direct challenge to Yahweh's kingship. He's basically saying, I don't recognize your authority here.
And how does Ahaziah respond to this challenge? You'd think he might, like, reconsider, realize he's made a mistake.
Yeah. Unfortunately, that's not what happens. He doubles down, sending not one, but two groups of soldiers to try to force Elijah to come down.
Wow.
And both times, Elijah calls down fire from heaven, consuming them.
This reminds me of the showdown on Mount Carmel, where Elijah proves Yahweh's power over Baal.
Yes.
But there's a different feeling here. It's like a chilling difference.
You're picking up on something really crucial. On Mount Carmel, the fire led to repentance.
Right.
People realized Yahweh's power and they turned back to him. Here, the response is more violence. Ahaziah is choosing to reject Yahweh's authority even more forcefully. It's like he's looking right at the truth and choosing to ignore it.
So there's this real sense of consequence here.
Yes.
Of like a choice being made with very real implications.
Yeah, absolutely. Ahaziah's story is an illustration of what happens when we reject the true king, when we turn away from the source of life and meaning. And it makes you wonder, what are some of the kings we might be serving in our own lives today?
That is something to think about. We'll be right back to continue this deep dive.
And we're back. And still thinking about what you said before the break about the, you know, kings that we might be serving in our own lives. What did you mean by that?
Well, it's easy to read this story and, you know, and think, oh, those ancient people with their idols.
Right.
But, you know, we all have things that we elevate to a position of ultimate importance.
Yeah.
Things we give our time and our energy and even our hearts.
So you're saying it's not always about, you know, like literal statues or gods.
Right.
It's more about like where we place our ultimate allegiance.
Exactly. Think about our culture today. You know, we might not bow down to golden calves, but we certainly have our modern day idols.
Right. Maybe it's career success where we're willing to sacrifice everything, our relationships, our health, even our values, just to climb that corporate ladder. Or maybe it's the pursuit of wealth and possessions, believing that, you know, having more will finally make us happy.
That makes me think about those articles that you sent on the impact of social media.
Yes.
It's almost like we're worshiping the idea of being liked and validated online.
Yes, and that constant need for external validation can become a kind of king that rules our thoughts and our actions. You know, we start measuring our worth by the number of likes or followers that we have, and it can lead us down this path of comparison envy and ultimately a sense of emptiness.
It seems like Ahaziah's story is a warning about what can happen when we get our priorities mixed up, when we lose sight of what truly matters.
Yeah, that's a great insight. And it makes you wonder, if those are some of the false kings that we might be serving, what does it look like to align ourselves with the true king?
I guess that's where the idea of repentance comes in, right? But I think a lot of people have kind of a negative association with that word.
Yeah.
You know, they think of like fire and brimstone or feeling guilty and ashamed.
Yeah, I understand that. But repentance isn't about self-flagellation. It's about recognizing where we've gone astray and choosing to change direction. It's like being on a road trip and realizing you've taken a wrong turn.
Yeah.
You don't just keep driving in the wrong direction. You course correct.
Right.
You turn around and you get back on the right path.
So it's not about being perfect. It's about being willing to change.
Precisely. And the amazing thing is we have the power to do that at any moment.
Okay.
Unlike Prohaziah, who seemed determined to stay on his destructive path, we have the freedom to choose differently. We can choose to step off the throne of our egos, to dethrone those false kings that are demanding our allegiance, and to say, you know what? I'm going to align myself with something bigger than myself, something that offers true and lasting meaning.
Wow. But that can be hard, can it? Especially when, like, everyone around you seems to be worshiping those same false kings. It takes courage to go against the grain.
You're absolutely right. But I think that's where Elijah's example can be so inspiring. You know, here he was standing up to a king, challenging the status quo and proclaiming the truth, even when it was dangerous. He was a model of conviction and courage.
Yeah, it makes you wonder what his inner life was like. Did he ever doubt himself? Was he ever afraid?
That's a fascinating question. The text doesn't give us a lot of insight into his personal struggles, but I imagine he must have faced moments of uncertainty, just like any of us would. But ultimately, his faith in Yahweh, in the true king, gave him the strength to keep going, to speak truth to power, and to call people back to what truly mattered.
So it's not about being fearless. It's about having faith, even when it's hard.
Right.
And it makes you think, what would it look like for us to embody that kind of courage in our own lives? What kings might we need to confront even within ourselves?
Those are great questions to reflect on. And I think it starts with simply being aware, recognizing the idols we're tempted to serve, the false narratives we're buying into, and the ways we might be straying from the path of true meaning and purpose.
We'll be back in a bit to continue this conversation. We're back. And, you know, it's really striking how this ancient story of Ahaziah and Elijah feels so relevant today. It makes you wonder, what would it look like to truly embrace the idea of Yahweh as king in our modern lives?
That's a great question. And, you know, I think it goes beyond just believing in God. It's about recognizing that he's not just some distant deity, but the ultimate source of authority in our lives.
So it's not just about like going to church or following religious rituals.
Right.
It's about something deeper, something that impacts like our everyday decisions and priorities.
Exactly. It's about asking ourselves, What would it look like to live as if Yahweh was truly king in my life? What would change about my relationships, my work, my use of time and resources?
You know, you've talked a lot about the, you know, kings that were tempted to serve the idols of success, materialism, validation. But I'm curious, what are some practical ways we can start to dethrone those idols and align ourselves with the true king?
Yeah, that's where the rubber meets the road, isn't it? It starts with awareness, like we talked about, taking an honest inventory of our lives and asking, what am I giving my ultimate allegiance to? Is it my career, my bank account, my image on social media?
And then what? Once we've identified those false kings, how do we start to shift our allegiance?
Well, you know, it's about making intentional choices day by day. Maybe it's setting boundaries around work so we have more time for our families and for spiritual reflection. Maybe it's simplifying our lifestyle so we're less focused on accumulating possessions and more focused on experiences and relationships.
So it's not about becoming some kind of like ascetic monk.
Right.
It's about aligning our priorities with what truly matters.
Right. It's about finding that balance between our responsibilities in this world and our longing for something more. And I think that's where the idea of repentance comes in. It's not about beating ourselves up for our past mistakes, but about acknowledging them, learning from them, and then choosing to move forward in a new direction.
And it's a process, right?
It is.
It's not like we flip a switch and suddenly we're perfectly aligned with the true king.
Right.
There will be setbacks, there will be temptations, but it's about continually reorienting ourselves, coming back to that center.
Exactly. And that's where grace comes in. It's knowing that even when we stumble, even when we fall short, we're not disqualified. We can always get back up and dust ourselves off and keep moving forward.
You know, one thing that's really stood out to me in this whole deep dive is the idea that choosing Yahweh as king isn't about restriction or deprivation. It's about finding true freedom and lasting meaning.
That's such an important point. You know, when we dethrone those false kings that promise us happiness but ultimately leave us empty, we create space for something far greater to enter our lives.
It's like we're trading in counterfeit currency for the real deal.
Exactly. And that's where the adventure begins. When we align ourselves with the true king, we open ourselves up to a life of purpose, joy, and a sense of belonging that no earthly king could ever provide.
What a powerful image to end on. Thank you for taking us on this deep dive. It's been eye-opening, to say the least. And for all of you listening, we hope this has sparked some reflection on the kings you might be serving in your own lives. If you could ask Elijah one question about this whole story, what would it be? Keep seeking truth, and we'll catch you on the next deep dive.